All the world's a market, but what tactics are people taking to disrupt the current markets that they're in? We at Bullseye Media seek to explore how marketing impacts our daily lives, even in the most underappreciated settings. Our purpose in occupying your earbuds today is to shine a light on life's daily practices, examine how marketing plays a role in those common rituals, and how we as advertising professionals can learn from a world around us to affirm and strengthen our creative marketing practices. This is Disrupt the Market. Welcome, everybody. I'm Dylan Lamb, Creative Director here at Bullseye Media. With me is SEO Specialist Eli Radke.
Hello. Glad to be on the podcast today.
As well as Senior Copywriter Julia Weiss.
Hello. I'm also glad to be on the podcast today.
Ooh, challenge accepted. Today, we'll be talking about what makes us swipe right. How are dating apps becoming a mini marketing microcosm, and how can we take what marketing tactics are being used in online or application dating and apply them back to what we do here at Bullseye? Eli and Julia, it's my understanding that apart from being superlative creative professionals, you are also active dating app users. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I've been an active dating app user on and off since the early 2010s.
So what broke you in on the scene, Julia, and where have you transitioned in your application preferences?
Well, not to reveal my age, but I started pre-app, I guess, actually, with OkCupid after, you know, that first breakup of adult life when you're like, oh, gosh, I'm 24. My life is over. And so my friend was like, well, have you tried online dating? I'm like, no. And then we made a profile on OkCupid for me.
So OkCupid seems to have been kind of the OG web-based platform that really made this socially accessible and socially acceptable to talk about. You know, there used to be euphemisms of meeting online. If we ran into each other at the grocery store, you had to have this whole story. Now it's like if you haven't met online, you're either a dinosaur or you're just not trying to put yourself out there.
I think you got, and like just speaking from now that there's so many options, you got to go to where the people, like, I mean, you know, it's the watering hole where people are at. You know, you got to find your market where it exists, kind of basically.
So correct my history if it's wrong, but it seems like Tinder was the original transition off of the website and into the palm of your hand in an application.
And I think it marked a distinct difference with when OkCupid feels a little bit more formal, and it still is. I think it's the more formal option when you're like, all right, I'm selling it out full send. I want to find someone to spend the rest of my life with. Where Tinder was like, how are you going on a couple dates?
Yeah, I think that like the transition into app dating follows kind of like the broader attention span of the culture. We went from like the paragraphs of OkCupid to the pictures and the blurbs.
Yeah.
Pictures and blurbs.
And it was just swiping, you know, standing in a line and knocking them left or right.
Absolutely. If there's one thing that Tinder got down and made a common household reference is that UX UI integration of swiping left or swiping right. Beyond that, it seems like all other qualifications on Tinder are more or less the Wild West, but everyone loves a good left or right swipe. So if that's all you're looking for on a dating profile, Tinder seemed to get that down as the minimum viable product.
Yeah, Tinder pioneered that UX, UI, the swipe left, swipe right, and kind of the functionality of a dating app, whereas Bumble took a problem that Tinder introduced, kind of creeps and that kind of stuff, and weeded it out with the women message first, and then Hinge has kind of perfected that in the kind of closer to OkCupid, I would say, where people go on there to be a little bit more serious.
Seems like there's a little bit more of a validation or a certification that you have to go through with Hinge that you can't just be out there catfishing or throwing out any sort of messaging hither and thither, that there has to be some sort of validity or verification that you are who you are. Is it fair or is it too far to say that the Hinge is the LinkedIn of dating apps?
I've heard like horror stories of like people trying to connect romantically on LinkedIn.
Yikes.
So LinkedIn might be the LinkedIn of dating apps, but
oh, the audacity.
Might be time for a public service announcement not to conflate your social media outlets with your dating profiles. We are not endorsing that here at Bullseye Media.
Absolutely not.
So Bumble, like we established, is that you've already synced up on a match with the person that you're interacting with. Is it fair to compare that to more of an inbound lead where there's already a warm lead being generated and that the conversation is less, there's less pressure on that opening line to to access your target market because you've already expressed mutual interest.
I think that's correct, because I think that specifically with Bumble, you're seeing, you know, the swipe left, swipe right functionality. But then when you, it shows you when you get a match, you know, you swipe. And so then that's kind of, you have to wait for the conversation to start. And once you know it's there, it's a little less pressure. Whereas Hinge, I think it's a lot more similar to kind of what we do at Bullseye, where, you know, you're putting out a marketing statement, you're putting out a graphic, you're putting out a blog post, you're putting out something like that out there, and someone comes and clicks on it, and then you have to follow up on that click. You have to follow up with a thoughtful thing that's going to make them engage further, that's going to make them dive deeper into your profile or want to talk to you for longer.
Bumble, Hinge, Tinder, you have like your basic like brand image that you've put out here, your like thesis of like, here's what I am and what I have to offer, like swipe to learn more, basically. And it's like, as a woman who dates men on Bumble, then it's on me to get that warm lead hotter, so to speak. So I actually do feel a lot of pressure there, because it's like I have to craft something that is within like the voice of the brand I've put out that also is like now acknowledging their thing.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating to me, because Julia, you literally described your occupation. You write compelling taglines that are speaking to a direct target market all the time. So what's the difference when it's you, when you're the brand?
Well, that's the thing. Well, and I think that's why like agencies like us exist, because, you know, the brand wants the love. And when you want it, sometimes it's hard to know what to say to get it, to know how, when you want to reach like this person or this like market, like, what do I say? And it's so much easier to do it for someone. Like my friends and I sometimes will like switch phones and like play with each other's dating apps. I dated someone for 3 months once after a friend sent a bunch of like intro messages to people.
That's a very good friend. And I think it's why it's important that a friend who knows you, who can speak on your behalf, but also take away some of that pressure of speaking for yourself, is such a valuable asset. And I would argue that that's sort of what a marketing agency does for a company. We know that they want to get their message across. We know that they care about it and that they know the message better than anybody else. But we can be that outside perspective to say, I get what you're trying to say here, but I don't think that's the way that to say it that's going to really get the results that you're looking for.
When we think about marketing and what it does, like when we think about dating apps, like it's a very convenient skeleton to put marketing on. But when you look at what marketers actually do and like the work that goes into it, you know, it's doing that research ahead of time and kind of having that baseline of like, wow, all this stuff is here. And then it happens organically. Like someone clicks on something, you're like, wow, that was easy. It's like, well, it was 3 months easy, but yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. Glad we could get it done.
I wanted to talk about how you go about arranging the ever-important image collection, or the carousel ads, if you will, of your own dating profile. How do you pick the select 4 to 6 photos that are going to represent you and all that you do and be attention-grabbing for that first impression?
There are a lot of like sort of best practices or rules that people say, like you need to have a good face picture, you need to have a full body picture, you need to like show that you have friends and you have an interesting like hobby or something. So when I go about crafting my profile, I do try to like, I'm like, okay, what is an accurate representation of what I look like now? I seek to showcase my personality through those pictures. I'm like, I want something that's got like a weird coat or outfit in it, because when I show up on that date, like I'm probably going to be wearing, the last date I went on was a blind date. And the guy asked me, do you wear that coat like every day? It was a big red furry coat. And so it's like, I've got that coat in my dating profile.
Very nice. You bring up a very great point that we at Bullseye live by in our proprietary mantra of positive market disruption, is that ultimately, if this all goes well, you're going to meet up with these people and you're going to have to back up what you're claiming mm-hmm. on your dating profile. And so we can advertise the greatness of ourselves until the cows come home, but if we can't back it up with what the authenticity of who we are turns out to be, then it's going to probably negatively affect that outcome.
Yeah, it's like you see a picture of a fast food burger, and that's not what a fast food burger is going to look like when you get it. You might still fall in love with that burger. You might call upon that burger late at night when you're lonely and need some love. But like, it's not, there's a disconnect there between like the truth and the story. And like with a dating app, you want, I at least, I'm like, I won't necessarily pick like the best picture of me ever if it doesn't really look like me. Mm-hmm. And so I strive to do that and like make sure that I've got my personality in there and my dog. And the dog is there for two reasons. One, because I love her. And two, my target audience will be in to seeing a beautiful rescue pit bull on a gorgeous orange chair that I bought from the internet on Black Friday.
Well, I was going to ask, like coming from the other side of the dating app game, like what is a picture you see either all the time or right away that you're like, this isn't going to work?
I automatically swipe left on two different types of pictures. One is the mirror selfie.
It's also just a cautionary tale on DIY photography and videography.
Yes,
another great
true.
Reason to have a marketing agency on your side.
You're going
to,
yes. I guarantee you, you're going to look better in a selfie every time than in a mirror selfie. Get your full body shot from a friend. Have your coworker take a picture of you. Skip the mirror selfie. The other one is like, I need men to not do the face where they've got their mouth closed and it's like a smirk and like one eyebrow's kind of up and the camera's kind of above. It's like a not smile. It's like the dude not smile smile.
I'm trying to do the face.
And I don't auto.
This is an audio podcast.
And I think that we are probably about to touch on the fish pics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not the fish that makes me question. It is the ubiquitousness of the fish or the boat or the Machu Picchu.
And I think, you know, once upon a time, some dude went and he's like, I'm going to put this fish on my profile picture. And then people were like, holy crap, I want to date this man. And for the next 20 years, every dude ever has put a fish on their dating
profile. It worked for Mike.
Exactly. It worked for Mike. It's got to work for me. So there are these things like fish pics for dude. The mirror selfie is a big one. But I try to put like, you know, genuine photos like, and I do, at one point I did have a fish pic, but it was funny because the fish was like an inch long.
See, that's the way to do it. That comments on the trend without, like, show me you're aware of the trend without, I tried to do the TikTok thing.
Yeah, it subverts the expectation because I think a fish pic, I would liken it to what we see professionally as a stock image. It's something that you see so often that it actually holds no value. So to be able to either subverts that expectation by showing a 1-inch fish as a prize catch, or is that fish juxtaposed with some other pictures that are going to give a bigger, more complete version of who you are?
Mm-hmm. And I think that when we think about that from a marketing perspective, like a Trojan horse, you know, a fish pic, like at a face value, if I were to put an alt tag, you know, for accessibility, fish pic is like, that is, you know, everyone has a fish pic. So that's a big keyword. Like that's going to be in this search of 10,000 dudes.
But you're probably not trending on fish pic.
Exactly. You're not trending on fish pic, but you could get found on fish pic or like some traffic. And when they get there, you know, the Trojan horse of it is like, oh, it's funny because like man holds little fish pic to to subvert the expectation of fish pics, or the idea that like it's a commentary on this. There's all these kind of like expectations and little tiny things you can do around a photo that has been used a million times that kind of make it unique to yourself, like a long tail keyword would be. Like you wouldn't do tractors, you would do like tractors that harvest corn near me.
So what would your long tail dating image set be?
Be like bald, bearded man who bakes and fishes and plays role-playing games looking for love.
Beautiful. You just got a long tail your fish pick, people.
Is that a knock at the door? Is that a knock at the door here?
Wow. Yeah, the phones are off the hook.
And to just further celebrate your small fish pick is that like you will sometimes see people be partway there of like being aware that something is like has become trite or cliche. And instead of like subverting it or just leaving it out altogether, all they do is like they'll be like, you're no fish picks, you're welcome, ladies, or like something like that. And it's like that is only part of the journey that you need to take. Like, it's like, recognize that you're aware of this, thing that you think is trite that these people are also probably bored with, you're going to do a better job reaching your audience by doing something with that information as opposed to just stating it.
That's a great point, that anyone can default to ironic criticism. What it really takes for creative ingenuity to stand out in the market is taking what is known and subverting that in a playful and positive way.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to kind of when we talked a little about like other people running a dating app or something, you know, mm-hmm. you can be like, oh, you know, like, should, you know, 5'11", if that matters on my dating app. And like, it's supposed to be like a genuine, you know, positive, but you know, that comes off as just a terrible look. And you know, if your friend looks at it, they're like, dude, you should take that down and like say maybe a more creative way to tell someone you're 5'11". And I think that when we think about content and when we think about things we put out there, whether it be our business, whether it be marketing, whether it be our dating apps, it's like you need that second opinion or that one mm-hmm. level removed that knows you and knows the language you speak in and knows like your true intention, but isn't going to be so married to that, that, you know, you're looking at a tree and being like, oh, the stick broke. And that's why it's falling down when there's a chainsaw coming from the other side.
I think the key in all of this and in any sort of like marketing or putting out a brand image, whether it's like your personal brand on like a dating app or other social media or like your business, is that get that third eye to be like, here's objectively what's great about you. Now let's have fun telling the truth.
Yeah. Joining us now in our makeshift studio is our amazing account manager and former matchmaker, Ashley Newman. Ashley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Ashley, your Venn diagram of expertise was too much to resist not pulling you in for some real cold hard facts as we examine the cross analysis between our marketing efforts here at Bullseye and what's going on in the Wild West of the dating world at large. Would you mind talking a little bit about your experience as a matchmaker and how you went about kind of matching and potential fits?
Yeah, so it's all about learning who you're with, right? Who you're talking to, researching everything about it, right? So when somebody would reach out to me, I would find out everything about them. I would find out what their core values were, what how they lived their lives, what market they were in, financial-wise, where they leaned, how they leaned religiously, politically. All of those things line up to what people really are looking for. So for the first probably 25 minutes is just asking a ton of questions, becoming a master at what this person is looking for, who they are, and everything about them, which aligns a lot in marketing, where you have to figure out everything about everything.
So yeah, do you have weird moments of deja vu when we go through our client brand builds and literally ask, like, who are you? What are you looking for? Those same types of 25 minutes of hard questions.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I feel knowing everything about something just makes it better. You know, you understand everything about it. You just become more successful that way, especially when it's coming to people's, you know, bread and butter, their love life, their business, anything that really is a basic human need. You really have to make sure that you have a grasp on it.
When someone comes to you and says, like, this is what I'm looking for, how do you go out and find those matches? Are you looking at keywords in a profile? Are you looking at like a specific place? Like, how can these people be found?
Yeah, so I found it was pretty fascinating depending on what markets they were in. So I worked a lot of different markets in a lot of different states, and people were looking for different things dependent on where they were at. So I had to go to those markets and figure out, oh, people between the ages of 30 and 45 are really into this. This is how they live their lives. A lot of them are in these kind of career paths. Most of them lean this way politically. And then I would figure out different networking events to attend and meet those types of people for my clients in those areas. So it was a lot of time to go out, figure all of that out, get all of those like little pieces of information, and then bring it back and say, for what you're looking for, here's the pot you have. You know, a lot of people get really deep down into the weeds of what they're looking for, and it's more just bringing them back up and say, hey, look it, these are all these touch points that you could have, these people that you could meet if you just broadened your horizons a little bit, instead of just being, oh, these are my four things, and these are the only four things that I can look at.
Eli, in response to that, can you compare that to your process of, you know, vetting through a competitive audit what might be available in a market and then creating target market personas for an individual client?
The people that we work with have a very specific goal in mind, which is great because I think that's a good thing to work towards. And like in your instance, the goal is to, you know, have a date. Get a date, go on a date, or get match made. And like, if it's a marketing thing, it's, you know, it's to get leads, it's to get, you know, business sales. And that is a lot of the times the hyper focus, like, let's look at that. But there's so many other touch points about what we do and how to identify who's going to make that sale or click on that thing that we provide as someone who's not, you know, nose in the dirt looking like, I need to find this one thing. We're like, hang on, like, look at, there are many more things to explore, many more things to, you know, more than one way to peel an apple, if you will. So like keywords, for instance, are like, we broaden the keyword set where there's, you know, your target ones, which are going to be your, you know, obviously like, I want, you know, someone who has the same religious background as me, someone who is active, things like that. Those are like the core things. But there are all these things around that, that a lot of times people don't think about, like, well, you know, community is a big part of religion and like kind of looking at that, or like, you know, if they're active, like, well, they don't necessarily have to be active, but they're interested in active things, making that web as you do it. So you can find people who may not necessarily be the warm leads, but are warm enough that you can bring them in and kind of slowly draw that in, or at least widen the net so there are more options.
Is this the accurate use of this idiom, not being able to see the forest for the trees? Like, you get so focused on what is ultimately like a pretty broad specific goal, whether it's like, you know, profit or love. And the a lot of discovery can be made in the process of getting to that point. And what we call, like, you know, the perfect person who checks off all these boxes, really what the goal is love and connection. And I am wondering, like, do you find this when talking to clients or when you were matchmaking, talking, having these conversations with your clients then, like, did those conversations help them make discoveries about what was really more important to them?
Yeah, that was probably my favorite part. When people get to the point where they're paying thousands of dollars to have somebody find them a person, you know, a lot of people are at the point where they're willing to change the way that they are going about it because what they've been doing hasn't worked. So you still have those people that, you know, come at you and they're like, this is exactly what I want. I don't want to do anything. Like, I don't want to date anyone who's under 6 feet. I'm like, okay, well, everyone shrinks. And it's a lot of just introducing different people with a different sales strategy, mm-hmm. right? I just market different people. I market other clients that I have. Like, hey, this guy, here are all the amazing things about him. And then, you know, soften the blow with, you know, he's 5'6" and a half. but you're 5'3", so it doesn't really matter. So it's a lot of just like tempering their expectations and making it so they can see it from a more excited point of view other than what they've been thinking their whole lives. So if somebody says to you, hey, Julia, let's go get some banana cream pie, and you're not a banana cream pie fan, right? And then somebody's like, oh my gosh, but I found this banana cream pie. It's amazing. I love it so much. You'd want to try it. You know, you'd want to take that step and be like, you know what? I might try it. What if I love it? What if it's as great as everyone's saying? And that's what I found, that a lot of my clients, they just wanted to say yes to me. And those were the best ones. Those were the ones at the best time. I had 2 weddings off of those. And would they have ever met other than that? No. Because they were like, I don't know. They had 4 things off my list of 245 that I didn't like.
I love like the idea of like the kind of give and take of perspective that's at play in matchmaking, app dating, and in marketing of like, you know, there's the act of like persuasion and demonstrating the value of this person, this brand. And there's also the introspection on the part of the person or brand to like change tactics or make new discoveries. Mm-hmm. I think that's
interesting. Well, I think that's so interesting when we talk about positive market disruption, when we talk about ambitious creativity. You know, we are the wrench that can, you know, go out there and get you into a new dating pool and find these people that, like, you know, maybe you weren't looking for a 5-6 guy, or you weren't looking for an email marketing campaign, but suddenly you got, you know, 10,000 sales in your inbox and you're feeling like, you know, I like 5-6 guys.
Like, yeah, I'm glad I tried that banana cream pie.
Exactly.
I love how you phrased that, is that it's not having them buy in on a derivative product. It's having them open their minds to a different possibility than they've tried before. Have you found that experience changing your position, but still using the same skills?
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover in, you know, both of the positions that I've had. Dealing with clients on both ends is really just setting up the expectations and making sure that they understand what they're going to be given, when they're going to be given it. And like, it might be different than what they originally thought, right? You're never going to get exactly what in your mind you think that you're getting. And a lot of people love that. You know, I think that's where the beauty lies in both, is look at what we created for you, or what I found for you that you didn't even know you wanted.
You reference weddings as kind of an end outcome of a positive result. Yeah. Are there other KPIs for a matchmaker that you're trying to track down the funnel?
Yeah. So I really, second dates were how I rated my success, right? First dates that turn into second dates are always the best. Nobody's gonna give second chances. It's fine. I wish they would, but okay. But first dates that turn into second dates typically turn into third dates. So that's how I would rate my success on matching people.
We represent a lot of recruiters, and recruiters often talk about the infinite variables of trying to match two human beings and all of their subjective needs at any given point. I can't imagine that being as comparable and probably even turned up a notch as when there's romantic stakes at play here too.
It's crazy.
What are some of the variables that diminish the possibility of getting from that first to that second date?
Yeah, so a lot of it is timing. If two people aren't in the same place at the same time, it's rarely going to work. Like, you have to want the same things at the same time, and typically finding somebody that's on that same page as you is not easy or not right. You can tell. And when you're I would do all these like really long 2-hour interviews with these people, and they were like hard questions, like the hard questions, not, you know, what do you look for physically, but, you know, what do you do on Sunday mornings? Like, how do you live your life? What do you want? Like, for real. And a lot of people just don't align. And that's what really causes the rifts.
So one of the things, like, when you're thinking of this and when you're talking about matching human data points, it made me think of this. And I'm a huge, huge baseball guy, and I love the Moneyball movie that came out a couple years ago with Jonah Hill and stuff. And how does, like, so I think that it's so interesting that you're essentially given, you know, obviously a person, but you have these data points that just sit here, and they are just data points. You know, it's just like, I like to get breakfast on Sunday, which does not inherently have a personality, or I am, you know, 25, like, that doesn't have a personality. How do you make the data speak, and how do you, like, give the data a human face for other people so that you can present that?
You really just have to make it about them, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to talk about themselves. Everybody wants to hear good stories about themselves, right? So when I would present a match to somebody, I would only tell them the stuff that they also aligned on, right? So I would call it sizzling. I would sizzle their match for them, right? Like, do the high points, the stuff that I know they really liked that they aligned on. And then there's always going to be some stuff that doesn't. So, you know, if somebody is really into watching sports on Sundays, I'd be like, oh, you know, she's a huge sports fan. He's a huge sports fan, loves whatever team they love to, which, you know, in the long run, who really cares? But it matters, right? Like, if you're somebody who loves to watch football on Sundays, and that's your whole thing that you do, and you make it a big deal every single Sunday, and you're with somebody that's like, no, I would rather not do that ever, and I'm mad that you're doing it, it's going to cause a problem, right? So there are little things that people don't really think of and end up, once they start compounding, ruining relationships.
Ashley, if you could boil it down to, you know, if it came down to 2 or 3 foundational characteristics or values, you know, what are those indicators that are going to speak to the longevity of a potential relationship?
Yeah, I would say family values, what type of family unit somebody wants, if they want kids, if they don't, if they're close with their family, if they're not. That's a huge deal breaker for a lot of people. religious beliefs is really high for a lot of people. And then just general lifestyle, how you live your lifestyle. If you're active, you want somebody who's also active. You know, if you like to go out or if you're a homebody, like the things that you want to spend time with your partner doing, if they also don't want to do that, it's not the best.
Apart from common interests, what are some of the qualities that really activate an equal or lasting partnership?
Yeah, I would say a sense of humor for both people is probably the biggest. Every client that I've ever worked with, that's always one of their top things. I want somebody that can make me laugh, regardless of what type of humor it is. That's the biggest one. And then just general kindness. There's not a lot of people that are looking for, you know, somebody who's rude.
I want an unfunny rude man, please.
I mean, there's some people that want an interesting type of person, and I'm like, that's cool. I don't know where I'm going to find that, but I'll try.
I think that speaks a lot to kind of the content we create here too. Like just like thinking about it in the general, like matching people up sense is like, you know, we ask our clients a spice level when we onboard them because we want to know how willing they are to, you know, go out on a limb and try those things that like make people laugh. And I think that, you know, when you look at marketing, what works and what is when people take themselves less seriously, like, you know, it's not always the Gillette, you know, Audi commercials where you're screeching around corners and you're James Bond. Sometimes it is. But I think that like the media that works and the stuff that's the most fun to collaborate on and to make, it's the stuff that makes people laugh and the stuff that brings the client's voice out and shows, you know, the people that are looking for that client that they are funny beyond just, you know, being a name on a page.
Always authentic, always specific, preferably humorous.
Yes.
In dating and in marketing.
Yes, that's perfect.
Ashley, final thought. For any brands that might be thinking of getting back out there and potentially meeting up with you as a matchmaker / account manager, what advice would you give those brands?
I would give them the advice to be super genuine to what they want, who they are, the core values of their business, and add some humor. It's what people are looking for, especially after these past couple of years.
Hearing from Ashley, it's kind of hilarious how much of an overlap there is between approaching dating life at large and also adhering to that mantra of positive market disruption. The way that we outline that at Bullseye is that positive market disruption is releasing content that a market isn't used to seeing but wants to see again. It's content that encourages engagement with every piece of content and puts the ball in the court of the viewer to respond. And then content that you're able to actually back up with how good you authentically are. You know, being genuine, being subversive, humorous if possible, and then calling for that engagement so that that interaction is more of a warm lead, if you will. Kind of throwing it out for final roundtables here. Julia, how are you using your skills as a marketer in your daily practice, in and outside of the office and perhaps even, you know, drifting into the dating world?
Something that Ashley said, like, sparked this of, like, she talked about sharing the things that you're excited about. And I think that that's obviously something that, you know, we do hear, getting what, like, a brand is excited about, figuring out what makes you excited about a particular client, like, the writing in that is always so much stronger. And in my daily life, I apply that all the time. Even in just giving friends advice or helping someone on a bad day or like giving someone a pump up, I can effectively use language to illustrate to you why you're great. Then like when it comes to dating apps, I'm always looking to sort of be myself, which I think is inherently going to be something different. I don't want to like try to box myself in. I'm going to be funny. I'm going to be me. And that, yeah.
I hear you. I think that one of the things that we do as creatives and we do as a marketing company is like, you know, Ziploc and Rubber Band didn't come out the door to be like, we're going to take over the world today. But someone along the way said like, we're going to go off the track. We're not going to be another like face tissue. We're going to take a leap. And to be positive market disruption, you got to go somewhere where there's not framework. You got to jump out into the abyss, and it's scary. And that's what we're here for. You know, we're your wings. So we want to get you out there like Rubber Band, the first fish pick.
Why is authenticity perhaps the most difficult path forward in your messaging with all of the noise that surrounds it, but the most effective path?
I think that we have, as people, these seemingly contradictory impulses. We crave safety and we crave excitement. And I think that that longing to feel safe is what gets us sort of locked into areas of trend or by the book, this is just how it's done. We're also very social animals and we want to align with a community. And I think that what can get muddled in that desire for community and that desire for safety is the simple fact that we are weird, unique, interesting beings. And whether you are marketing yourself on a dating app or marketing your brand, I think that fighting against that fear, it's the only path to authenticity. Like just being excited about how honest you're being, just celebrating what's great about you, admitting where you need to grow. Like there's nothing more refreshing than that.
If you're a business looking to get back out there, we want to be that friend that you hand the phone to speak on your behalf, knowing that you can back it up authentically once you meet that person on the other end of your messaging. Slide into our DMs. Let's have a conversation. This has been Disrupt the Market.